some exceedingly great brands, to my mind, today are struggling because they've got so hard into the ROI traps. Mm-hmm. Every dollar has to generate X amount into my funnel. And if it's not generating my funnel, it won't go. So I think the issue of transactional marketing, to my mind, is passé. I mean, a real marketer has to, a certain amount of your marketing has to work. So it has to give you returns, there's no doubt. But some part of it has to be about actually changing consumer behavior.
Marketing is dead. Long live marketing. My name is Atul Nath, and you're listening to the Control-Alt-Delete-Reboot Marketing Podcast, a toolkit podcast for anyone who is looking to connect with tomorrow's customers and build tomorrow's brands. Doing business today is like being tossed all around at the center of a tornado. To stay relevant in this manic world and be future-forward, I personally believe we've got to hit reboot for marketing as a whole. Through this podcast series, I will be talking to some of the best marketing brains in India. Well, actually, they are some of the best marketing brains in the world. And this is the second part of my conversation with Lloyd Matthias. Lloyd is an experienced marketer of over two decades and now an active angel investor. And he is a marketing and business strategist. Here, he talks to me about the marketing challenges faced by many startups today and how they can face up to them. Let's listen in.
Now, let me tell you a little bit about, some of the challenges in the startup ecosystem that I work with. One of the kind of basic premises I have with some of the venture capital companies that I, kind of work with, I always have this three-part equation saying, hey, I will work with a startup basis the following things. One is I need to spend a day or two with the promoters. Mm-hmm. So I want to see if that chemistry is right, right? Some kind of people you like working with and some mm-hmm. you don't. So that's really my kind of first hurdle or the first element that I insist on. The second I often do is really about spending a couple of days with some of their customers. Now, this could be a B2B, oriented startup, a B2C, but I like to go out and actually meet customers.
Interesting. Okay.
Because very often startup founders like to believe that their product is, the gateway to heaven, right? It can do everything. But until you actually go out and meet customers and, get their feedback, that gives you a real sense. The third one, which I look at very actively, is the line of sight to profit. Do they have a profit motive? Now, I want to say that the last one is not something that a lot of the VCs that I work with are happily concede. A lot of them really believe that, look, at some levels, they're entering some companies just to grow the top line, right? And at some point in time, they'll exit and, hopefully somebody else was.
Sure.
Like one of the VCs I work with pointed out to the fact that, LinkedIn never really made a big profit until they got acquired by Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So, right? So that part is a little debatable. Having said which, I think the charm and the joy of really working with this kind of the new ecosystem is it's a world that, far removed from the world of, the large corporates that I worked with. So one is you just love to see the energy, the pace, the nimbleness at which these organizations work. The other big learning for me is also the fact that a lot of the new age founders, they're not afraid of failure, right? So wearing the fact that you failed in your first three startups, they wear it as a badge of, very proudly. And I think that is refreshingly brilliant for me. Right? Where,
We never did.
Absolutely. In the large corporates, you did everything to kind of, bury your past and
minimize your risks rather than absolutely maximizing your returns.
So I think that part is, worth its weight in gold.
Sure. Okay. How did one kind of look at the role of marketing as a whole for a Pepsi or even a Motorola or a Tata Teleservices? And I'm treating that entire block of time as one, from the mid-90s when we kind of liberalized. India got liberalized and right down till maybe 10 years ago, versus tomorrow's large companies. Mm-hmm. What will be their marketing challenges? And I don't mean their startup challenges, but their marketing challenges, given the hyper active nature of business as it is today.
The single biggest challenge I see for a lot of the new age companies is that at one level, there's an equalization in terms of the budgets available, right? Historically, it was always the large old economy companies, right? The Pepsis and the Motorolas that sat on big budgets. And you expected new players to be kind of playing at these kind of fringes or with marginal monies.
Right.
I think today with the funding ecosystem having matured, I think that's no longer the case, right? So if you look at the top 10 advertisers over the last 3 years, a lot of these are companies that didn't exist 10 years ago, right? The Flipkarts and, you know, the Oyos and the Olas and, you know, all these big players. So I think that's one reality. The watch out, though, is that the old economy brands have typically built out a consumer profile and have built out a brand personality over the years. So whatever they do are very often additives to that. There are tweaks on that, right? So you know that Pepsi speaks the language of young. They speak to young people. If you look at Motorola, I think it's got a great design heritage. There's a certain kind of customer base that intrinsically recognizes.
So they're layering on to their brand.
They're layering on to what it is. For a lot of the newer brands, it's actually about creating a profile on the go, right? You suddenly, you know, have, you know, 500 crores of marketing spend, right? Let's look at Baiju's.
And
right?
How do you kind of attack this or meet this challenge? I mean, how do you see that happening?
I think that's where the challenge lies for a lot of, you know, the new age companies, is really looking through a prism of a 5-10 year period. While it's very fashionable in the, you know, in the startup ecosystem, we talk about pivoting, saying my business model is something today, 2 years from now, it could change radically.
Correct.
But I think to understand the role that your brand plays in consumers' lives over a 5-10 period, I think is critical. Right, let me give you an example of a brand that I've been following closely, Baiju's.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You possibly heard the news that Baiju's has bought the branding of the Indian cricket team shirts.
I did. That's right.
Now, clearly, in terms of branding real estate, it's possibly the most expensive piece of real estate in the country,
very
right?
Much,
branding,
yeah, sure.
you know, Indian cricket team shirts, having Virat Kohli's the world wear them all the while, huge. Now, how does one look at the fact that over the next 5 years, Baiju's as a brand will evolve, right? Today, they're clearly market leaders. They're redefining the space of young people's educations. They've got Shah Rukh Khan on board. They've got the shirts of the Indian cricket teams. They've got huge presence. But over the next 5 or 7 years, how does Baiju's as a brand evolve? What do they stand for? Do they need to bring elements of trust? Do they need to bring a bit of a kind of legacy feel about kids who've now graduated out of the Baiju's school of learning and today crack the IIT JEEs and, you know, are moving on to bigger things? So I think if they don't think through this over a 5-10 year period, I think a lot of this then will end up being very tactical. And I think, that's one of the challenges that not of the new economy brands have to recognize. You can have the big budgets to match the Nestle's and the Unilever's of the world. But if you don't have a 5, 7, 10 year vision of how you envision your brand is going to play a role in people's lives, what are the core values of trust, of credibility, of authenticity that you're going to build into your brand? I think then that money could be money down the tube. And I think that's a big watch out.
How important is the role of the founder here? I think the role of the founder is crucial here because at the end of the day, he's the brand owner, right? If there's anyone who can look out for the long-term value of the brand, it's going to be the founder. How important is it for him to be involved in the building of that brand and the marketing involved on that?
I think, per se, expecting every startup founder to have a deep insight into consumers and marketing may be expecting too much. A lot of them are, brilliant strategists, great product thinkers.
Good point,
And,
or could even be technologists, in fact.
Absolutely, cutting-edge technologists.
Sure.
So to expect them to have the understanding of how marketing works and the long-term importance may be difficult. But I think what startup founders need to do sooner than later is to certainly have the equivalent of an advisory board or someone that they can sound out, who then helps them look at this 3 to 5 year vision. And without that, I think, there's a danger of a lot of their short-term spending getting tactical, right? A lot of the startups I work with, I realize that the first marketing person they get on board, is someone a couple of years out of business school and he's tasked with saying, hey, get me so many likes. And he's really working with the ecosystem of Google search engine optimization, right? So Google search words and a little bit of, placements across social media.
Very tactical in that sense.
Very tactical, right? And then you suddenly realize that, look, if this brand has to go somewhere, if this company has to mature over the next 2 to 3 years, it really needs to build something of long-term value, right? And today in the digital ecosystem, you have the advantage of being able to therefore scatter your budgets, right? You can do a small amount of budget, which is tactical, but you can do some degree of long-term brand building.
Got it.
And I think that part is what a lot of the new economy companies actually have to come to terms with. And I do believe that the few ones that have made it big, besides being, spectacularly scaled up, have also thought through that reasonably well, right? For me, Paytm strikes as one, right? They've had a remarkable scale up maybe in the last 3 or 4 years. They moved from, let's say, a marginal player in the you know, mobile wallet ecosystem to being a dominant mainstream player today, almost nudging the big banks in that whole ecosystem. Now, somewhere in the process, how do they build values of trust? Eventually, you're talking of Paytm being a great kind of, you know, payments source. So elements of trust, elements of how they handle. And this has to move beyond just the classic tenets of brand building. It's about how the company comes through, how do the founder come through, you know, their hiring policies. So I think that aspect is something that that big companies, that brands that are, you know, scaling up need to look at very quickly.
You know, we always say that the memory of the public is very short, mm-hmm. right? What you remember today could be gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Does that impact brands? Do people care?
I think brands have to always stay cognizant of the fact that two parts. One is consumer memories get built over a long time. You know, so short-term activity and campaigns and tactics give you a big bump. But I think a lot of the good in brands do kind of stay over a period of time. People still remember, you know, positive developments about a company and things they do. The other part, of course, is in the digital era is that you're a Google search away from your digital footprint, right? Something that you did 10 years back, you know, a drunken brawl at a party may not test, you know, may kind of still stay, right? So what happens in
Vegas? The internet never forgets.
Absolutely, yeah. Right? So the old adage of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas may not necessarily hold. Yeah. And therefore, I think the challenge for a lot of the newer companies is really ensuring that you still curate your brand in a manner that stands the test of time, that's relevant, and that doesn't show up too many chinks in the armor in the way that you don't want to show them. At the same time, I think consumers are also very conscious that they don't want a very curated, you know, always, you know, lights and camera action in front of the camera kind of brand. They want a brand to be real, right? So you want to see those little moments when brands do what people slip. Do. So you want to see that occasional slip. But you want to make sure that the curation happens so that consumers always see this in positive light, warts and all, but not necessarily things that make them mistrust you. And I think that's critical.
A tough tightrope to walk. In the space of influencer marketing, do you see it as an ongoing trend that is likely to continue? Is it becoming a little jaded? Are consumers kind of, you know, saying, this guy's saying it for money anyway, so why bother? What do you think about influencer marketing overall?
I think influencer marketing, as we know it, is kind of changing. I think the early stage of influencer marketing is getting celebrities and, you know, pay them a value per tweet or, you know, per post.
Sure.
I think consumers are seeing through it. Right, I think, and it's not even, it doesn't speak well for a brand. It's not really authentic. But I think what it's morphing to is actually curating consumer conversation. So to my mind, therefore, curating conversations as opposed to paying influencers, is the future. So it's not about the big celebrity that people know it's going to be, but it's really getting a bunch of young people or just empowering a bunch of people, like the example I gave you about, you know, taking young people on a vacation.
Right.
Just how do you give them your brand, give them a little bit of latitude, and then tell them, hey, go ahead and do your piece. Knowing fully well that not all that comes out may be positive to your brand, not all will be positive creative. So I think the fact that you can have the openness of conversation, let consumers create their own things as they go along, I think that's the direction that influencer marketing will take.
But it not also just takes a peer. Certain amount of courage on the part of the brand owners to be able to do that. But courage to say that, you know what, we're going to put a certain amount of budget on this, a certain amount of investment on this, which what the return it will give me, I'm not sure.
Great point, Atul. So I think that is the second challenge. I think it's the marketer's ability to have, the courage to defend this investment in front of his next level. Because you got to go out and say that, look, I'm going on a limb on this particular project, but should it work, it's going to give me a disproportionate return. And one of the big fears I have for a lot of modern marketers is that they're so caught in this return on investment kind of gridlock. It doesn't always work, right? So and getting too hung up on this sometimes, to my mind, works in detriment. You know, some exceedingly great brands, to my mind, today are struggling because they've got so hard into the ROI traps. So every dollar has to generate X amount into my funnel. And if it's not generating my funnel, it won't go. So I think the issue of transactional marketing, to my mind, is passe. I mean, a real marketer has to, a certain amount of your marketing has to work. So it has to give you returns, there's no doubt. But some part of it has to be about actually changing consumer behavior. And that may not fit into your company's, you know, quarterly Wall Street Journal reporting cycle. And a lot of startups get it, Yeah. A, because they have less issues of, sure. you know, kind of weekly, monthly, and quarterly reporting. But a lot of the old companies sometimes really, really struggle with this change. If you look at some of the great brands that are built over the last, let's say, couple of decades, you know, brands that took long-term bets and were willing to make investments that were really not kind of looking at the business in a quarter-to-quarter cycle or, you know, or monthly setbacks.
Lloyd, it's been great chatting about some serious marketing stuff. So let's have some fun now. In your opinion, which is the best movie ever made?
Godfather. Can never tire of watching
the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Your favorite three songs ever?
Ah, tough.
Yeah, that's always a tough one.
Okay, so Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall, mm-hmm. always a classic. Mm-hmm. Great memories of We Are the World. Mm-hmm. I think I was in college and, you know, it kind of stood for something new.
Yeah.
And, hey, some great Indian melodies. I mean, I'm a big fan of Mukesh. I loved the song for Mera Naam Joker, mm-hmm. Jeena Yaha Marna Yaha.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All messages in the songs that you're talking mm-hmm. about. Okay, a book or a couple of books that most influenced you?
Two. I think the one I always loved is, you know, Gandhi's The Story of My Experiments of Truth. Mm-hmm. I think it's a, you know, it's a lesson in terms of how to kind of state one's beliefs very clearly. The another one which I read about 4 years back, which has influenced me strongly in my current work, is this book called Future Shock. So it's these two Harvard psychologists, but really talks about how do you kind of balance out your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lovely mm-hmm. paradigm of, you know, happiness, achievement, significance, and legacy. Mm-hmm. Saying you got to maximize on these four quadrants, but mm-hmm. whenever you go too heavy on one, you run the risk. Right?
Your favorite place to think big? In the shower?
I guess the walks. You know, I do an evening walk and it's a good time. I don't normally listen to music when I walk, so it's a nice time to open yourself to ideas.
Okay. If you had not built your career in marketing, what do you think you would have done?
I'd love to have been involved with a startup if I were mm-hmm. to live life again. You know, I think the best time to get into a startup is about 6-7 years into work when you just mm-hmm. had enough of the stuff of, you know, enough of the learnings of the work life without getting into that comfort shell.
Right. Okay. An object from your childhood you wouldn't throw away?
Oh, I still keep my old school tie. Reminds me of all the fun days in school.
Okay. Yeah. Those are the days we used to wear ties to school.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing you wish your phone could do?
I always thought of this, that every time someone calls, can I get a quick, you know, kind of Google link to the last two or three things he's done, right? Everyone's got a digital footprint. I just could kind of makes it easy because very often you know, you just want to pick up a thread of conversation. So sure. I think that would be very helpful.
Okay, there goes privacy. Okay, your favorite app on your phone?
I guess, still quite a Twitter guy.
Okay, great. For the benefit of all our listeners on the mm-hmm. podcast, it would be great if you could give some recommendations, something you've read or watched or listened to lately, something that's interesting, current.
There's a book I read recently called Enlightenment Now, Steven Pinker. I think it's a fantastic book. You know, something that...
I have not read that, okay.
You love reading. It just kind of opens up new vistas in your mind. Mm-hmm. I just found that book fascinating.
Enlightenment Now.
Enlightenment Now, Steven Pinker. And of course, my go-to read and whenever things are not the way it is always, you know, either watch a Woody Allen film or read a Woody Allen piece.
Those are your favorites. Okay, I'm going to share some recommendations. I've got four this mm-hmm. week. Mm-hmm. There's a podcast by a friend of mine, Ashu Garg. It's called How to B2B a CEO. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. He works in the Valley with a VC. So it's basically about how to scale your enterprise startup and how to mm-hmm. grow from founder to CEO. It's mm-hmm. a great listen. Lovely. Another one is a fun one called another podcast called The Awful and Awesome Entertainment Wrap by these guys from News Laundry. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a wrap up on mm-hmm. entertainment. It's a weekly one. It's quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book called Grit by Angela Duckworth, mm-hmm. which is really, really cool. It's basically based on her research, you know, about the importance of grit and perseverance and passion over genius, which is what we mm-hmm. think, you know, success is built on. So that's a great book. A really interesting documentary mm-hmm. called The Great Hack, which is on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
About Cambridge Analytica mm-hmm. and all that. And that's, mm-hmm. That's really good.
Very keen to see
I highly
that.
Recommend yeah. that. Very nice.
In fact, that triggers a thought. There's another mm-hmm. great podcast that I've just recently got onto is a guy called Amit Varma.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest one, actually, he's done a great interview with Santosh Desai.
Oh, okay.
And Amit Varma does op-ed pieces in the Times and such like, but a fabulous read. And, you know, my favorite Monday read in the Mint is Manu Joseph. Very provocative, always counterintuitive, but great reads.
And Santosh Desai is incredible. It's always fun to hear his viewpoint.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for being here on the Control-Alt-Delete Reboot Marketing Podcast. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Atul. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay, and that's a wrap for this episode. You can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or any other podcast platform. See you next time with another exciting guest from the marketing world.